Welcome everyone. It being the allotted time, I'll declare the meeting open at 6:05 p.m. Kaya Marman, Kaya Yoga, Kaya Bridia, Yananuk, Nalak Kadij Winji Yalak Nini, Nalak Kadij Nidja Butcha Bal, Wajak Nunga Butcha Lalak Nini, Kura Kura Nijie Burawan. On behalf of the town of Bassanine, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Wajak people of the Noongar Nation. May their campfires burn forever. That brings us to attendances and apologies. I have a few apologies. Mayor Renee McLennan is an apology for tonight. Also, Councillor Jai Wilson. Do we have any other apologies? Okay. We have some declarations from the CEO relating to items 7.11, 9.1 and 9.2. Are there any other declarations from councillors for any of the items on the agenda? No. Announcements. I'd just like to make a quick announcement. It's National Volunteer Week up until Sunday, the 23rd of May. This is a time to celebrate and acknowledge the generous contribution of our volunteers. This district has a really rich history of community volunteers leading the way in all sorts of endeavours to improve the lot of locals. From the early 19th century, hundreds of ladies in the town endeavoured to fundraise for improvements, eventually leading to the creation of the Bassanine Improvement Committee, after which our BIC reserve is named. At present, the town of Bassanine hosts over 60 organisations and volunteer groups, and our volunteers work in a diverse number of areas, including sporting clubs, music and arts groups, community transport, river and bush care groups, emergency services. The list goes on and on. The 2021 theme for Volunteer Week is Recognise, Reconnect and Reimagine. The number of recent nominees received for the town's community awards is a reflection of the many exceptional community members who contribute significantly to making Bassanine, Ashfield and Eden Hill a unique and special place to live. The community awards and citizenship ceremony for 2021 will be held this Sunday, 23rd of May, where the award recipients will be announced. Moving on, we have public question time and statements. 15 minutes will be allocated for addressees by members of the public on matters contained in the agenda. Questions and statements can be submitted prior to the briefing, and I do understand that I've just received several questions, so the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Councillor Haviland. If I might,
looking for the councillors.
Thank you. I have basically one major question about item 7.5. I've broken it into several pieces, and I'd ask it in pieces. The first part, why is the land being sold before any of the proposals in the draft master plan have been finalised, thus cutting off potential road access possibilities, not only for this centre, but for other surrounding residential developments? And I'd make the point that access and egress for cars and trucks are already difficult from this site, and they're only likely to get worse if the 10,500 square metre proposed development goes ahead. And I would strongly urge council to put the matter of traffic issues first as part of the master plan process.
Mr. Pearson, would you like the officers to actually address each question in turn? It might be.
Just sorry.
Would you like the officers to address each question in turn with a response?
I think I'll ask them all at once. They will descend to something and flow together. Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. The second part of the question is, why are there indentations in the blue boundary which appear to excise the large trees in West Road from the land to be sold? And I would have to say that the road reserve, if it's sold off, the canopy of the trees and left on the state land, which I presume will be vested in the council, will extend over Hawaiian land and their roots will be beneath it. I would suggest that the trees will almost certainly be subject to removal. Tree retention orders, I might add, I suspect would carry little weight before the SAT. And I would also suggest that the cost of the tree removal, having just been quoted $4,500 for removal of a couple of poplar trees, may well exceed any cost of parking area maintenance. And if it is indeed, and this is probably my salient point, is if it is indeed the intention to make West Road centred on the Hawaiian development, the new centre of Bassendean, I would ask that if that's to be the case, I'd ask councillors to turn their minds to the centre of Perth, where once the shops close, that descends into a ghost town. And I'd suggest that surely a vibrant, restaurant-oriented OPR with Old Perth Road with some character would be a better option, and it would have a good chance of attracting passers-by more than a sterile shopping centre. You know, there's one or two of those around that people may choose to use rather than something interesting and vibrant. And I would also ask to council to consider what Hawaiian may do if indeed they move quickly. That is to say, once the land is sold to them, they are capable of moving quickly enough, then that 10,500 square metre development will kill any chance for Old Perth Road. The business that end will just simply not survive the pressure from that big development. And so I would suggest that councillors, thinking maybe I'm exaggerating here, could have a little look at the access, what's it called on the plan, the access and movement plan in the section of the master plan, and have a look at the size of the pink circles and see whether that might give them a clue as to what, even with that going ahead together. So I would suggest that one of the things I'd ask councillors to do is to have a long, hard look at what Hawaiian may do, and have a long, hard look at what is available on the internet about the background to that company, and form their opinion as to what may happen. Thank you, Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. During your questions there, when you're referring to the master plan, I'm assuming it's the draft town centre master plans that you're referring to all throughout those questions.
Yes. The master plan is the creating communities master plan as presented to the workshops.
And did you actually give your address or your name at the beginning? Because I'm not sure if it's Peter Pearson, River Road. And would our officers like to address any of those concerns now, or do you want to wait till question time?
Happy to do either.
We are going to, councillors are going to ask questions when we get to 7.5, if you'd like to wait until that period of time.
Thank you.
Okay. We were going to have a deputation this evening from Mr. Jeff Dennis, who is the CEO of Swan Districts Football Club. However, due to some other commitments, I believe that deputation may be forthcoming at the OCM next week. Okay. We then move on to reports. So the first report we've got is item 7.1, the Bassendean Oval Lighting. And I would open the floor to councillors if they would like to ask any questions of the officers. Oh, do you want to do a briefing first? Sorry.
Happy to, Deputy Mayor. I'll keep it relatively brief. The report is simply asking Council to consider a request from the Swan Districts Football Club to fund a portion of upgraded lighting at Bassendean Oval, which is a venue managed by the town. As the report outlines, the existing lighting is substandard, and the request for a contribution to one third of the cost of upgrading to a training standard. The matter was discussed at a workshop last week, but it's being brought to council to enable a decision to be made in advance of the annual budget, which is expected to be considered next month.
Okay, Councillor Gangell, you had questions.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a few questions. I do note in the report that the lights are currently operating at approximately 30 lux. I believe that's if we're perhaps in luck. That all of them are actually on and facing the oval. Can I ask, what is the minimum required currently for training standards?
Through Deputy Mayor, depending on the nature of the use, obviously it's different for club football versus semi-elite versus elite, but for Swan Districts, which is classed as semi-elite, training standards is 100 lux.
Thank you. Then can I get an understanding, at what level would 30 lux be suitable for any sport, any level? What level would 30 lux be suitable for?
Through Deputy Mayor, I'd have to check the department's guidelines, but I'll suggest probably the minimum recommended standards probably go as low as 50.
Yeah.
I don't imagine they'd go as low as 30.
Yes, thank you. One thing I did ask... on the 27th of February, the CEO and Mayor, I never got a response to it though, and I'll ask it now. So we're of the understanding that the lights are clearly limited in their capacity, and they have been for some time, that they're subpar at the Oval. Has the town discussed this matter with our insurance? The lights have clearly been presented as a danger and not adequate for the purpose, and if any injury did occur due to poor standard of lighting, who would be liable?
Through Deputy Mayor, I'd suggest, I'm happy for anyone else to contribute as required, but the Swan District Football Club would have a duty of care to its own players. If they felt the lights were inadequate for use, it would be in their best interest not to use them.
So go outside the town?
Excuse me?
Go outside the town?
I suppose it would be up to the club, but in terms of the liability, I'd suggest it would be the club ensuring a duty of care to its players.
Yeah, so the club should look elsewhere to do training. Then also, can I just ask, outside of football, is there potential uses that new lighting could be used for at the Oval? For perhaps, I know we had Mr. Pearson mentioned earlier the possibility of more nightlife. Could that be a potential more nightlife activity in the summer months for festivals, concerts and the like if we had upgraded lighting there?
Through Deputy Mayor, broadly I'd suggest so. Obviously the lighting as it currently exists may well be sufficient for that purpose, but yeah. I think broadly improved lighting would enable increased utilisation.
Thank you. That's my questions.
So, other councillors with questions? Okay, I've got a couple of questions myself. On page 3 of the agenda, it indicates that we have replaced the globes, realignment of the lights, replacing control gear that's occurred this year. And I'm wondering how the subsequent lighting level was assessed. It seems to me in the report that it hasn't really been assessed. It's just an antidote. Has there been an actual assessment after the improvements have been done this year?
To you, Deputy Mayor, no. There's been no reassessment. The assessment that indicates that the current lighting level is about 30 lux was done a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago. So we haven't done any reassessments. It's just a bit of a assessment as we're out on site at night.
Okay, so my next question is page 4 of the agenda. So at the top of the page there, it indicates that infrastructure to support additional luminaries be added at a later stage, so over and above the existing proposal that's before us, that there's a proposal to add more lighting at a later stage to support additional luminaries to be added and reach a 200 lux level. Now, clearly, I would assume there's an additional cost to this. So has anybody assessed what that cost might be over and above the proposal that's in front of us?
Not at this stage, Deputy Mayor. We're, the assessment we have in front of us at this stage should cover most of the costs to enable it to the lux levels to be increased to 200. But that's still to be assessed. We'd like to do some further assessments prior to submitting for the grant funding.
Okay. Also on page 4, it indicates that the Town Centre Master Plan draft provides for the playing surface to be slightly shifted eastwards. Is this lighting infrastructure that we're looking at now based on the current oval layout, or is the potential new eastern repositioned layout the one that the plan's going to be done on? I'm curious about, given that the Town Centre Master Plan is not completed yet, and that was one of the proposals in that, I'm curious about how the planning will move forward on the lighting for the oval, given that the actual position of the oval may well be changed.
Through Deputy Mayor, that the comment in the report is simply noting that the draft master plan, which is yet to be adopted by Council, does provide for a minor reshifting of the playing surface. Whether it gets shifted or not, we expect the actual cost to stay largely the same. The point that's being made there is that if the master plan does provide for the oval to be shifted slightly, it would be good practice to put the lights in the ultimate future location, so you don't have to put them there once.
Okay. I do have some questions that are possibly relating to the licence agreement, which I'll hold back until we go behind closed doors. But I would like to ask some further questions about this item when we go behind closed doors. So if everyone's agreeable, we can move on to the next item.
Can we ask questions?
Oh, sorry, I thought you... I apologies.
That's okay. Can I just get an understanding? I note here we spend about $280,000 a year maintaining the oval. Can you just explain to me, I just want to get a proper understanding about the ability to have extra events on the oval, something to do with the nematode issue?
Excuse me. Yes, through the Deputy Mayor, there is a current nematode issue with the turf. It does limit what I would classify as heavy usage rather than soft usage. So it depends on what extra events we would be talking about. But the additional training, additional games that are occurring there at the moment is having an impact on the turf. We are investigating ways of addressing the nematode issue. We're calling in some experts to help us out. There's a lot of work the town has done over the years to investigate the nematode issue and have made adjustments to how we look after the turf to try and get it to its best performance.
Okay, so any extra kind of activity on the oval would be detrimental if we had extra events anyway?
I would say like large events, yeah. Particularly, I think they have motor shows on there sometimes, and that has a big impact.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to... No, that's fine. Thank you.
Councillor Partey?
Just one point of clarification, which I'm sure will be easily explainable. Under the section around licence... component. It just says the agreement obliges the town to maintain the playing surface, lights, viewing stands, and toilets. And then later on, under important things to note, it says that council is not obliged to agree to the request. So, if the lights that we are providing are not currently fully functional and to the standard required for waffle football, How are we acquiescing to our obligations there? How are we meeting our obligations to maintain the facility? Does that make sense?
Yeah, through you, Deputy Mayor. It's a question about the licence, but I'm happy to answer it now if that assists. Broadly, the licence doesn't oblige the town or council to do anything in relation to the lights, apart from allowing the club to use whatever lights are there.
Sure.
Can I just follow on from that question, one quick question before you come in, Councillor Quinton? Following on from that, would I be correct in assuming that the original usage of the oval by the club was less than what it is now, that over a period of time that usage has increased dramatically, and that the types of, the aspirations for the types of games to be held there require more lighting than what was originally agreed to in the licence? Would that be a correct assumption?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, possibly. I suppose with the increase of women's football, that may not have been contemplated at the time the licence was prepared. Obviously, it's before anyone here. But assuming the licence didn't contemplate women's football, the increase of that particular element would have led to increased use of the facility.
I guess my question comes from the fact that I remember in years gone by that most of the matches were daytime matches and there weren't as many nighttime matches. So that's why I asked that question.
We don't have nighttime matches there.
Hmm.
We can't.
They have training of a nighttime as well.
Training, yes, but 30 lux doesn't allow for matches.
Hmm. Okay. Councillor Quinton.
Sorry, thank you. I remembered my question. I just wanted to ask, how much has the club secured in CSRFF funding, grant funding?
Through Deputy Mayor, they haven't secured the funding, but their proposal involves seeking a third of the funding through the CSRFF, with the other third being self-funded from themselves, of course, and the other third being for the town if council indeed grants the request.
Yeah, so I guess this leads, which is really why it would have been nice to have Mr. Dennis here tonight to understand the reasoning behind the thirds, paying a third. Why wouldn't they apply for a higher amount under the grant?
Through Deputy Mayor, the CSRFF framework provides for a third, third, third.
Oh, it has to be a third. Okay. So if there's... would it... No, that's fine. You've answered my question. Thanks.
Sorry, just one further question. Did they have a successful submission in a previous year for the lighting upgrade?
Through Deputy Mayor, I'm not sure, but okay. We can certainly ask the call.
Thank you.
Councillor McWilliam.
Thank you. Just regarding the nematode and the nematodes in the actual oval and the difficulty of maintaining that, the costliness of that, does town have a strategic, or does Swan Districts even have a strategic sort of idea of how they might actually renovate or, you know, sort of bring me over back to what it should be? My understanding is that a lot of the nematodes are brought in from turf farms when turf is laid, so they're already infected, and that the management of this sort of scale would require that the oval be fallow in footy season, and that would mean that games would need to be played somewhere else. So it just seems to me that there's some opportunities in this discussion to consider some of the long term expenses that we might be able to ameliorate.
Thank you, Councillor. My understanding is that the second dot point of the officer's recommendation requests the Chief Executive Officer to continue to liaise with Swan Districts Football Club regarding a revised agreement for the club's use of the Bassanine Oval. So that would be a discussion for our administration to continue with the club. I do have one last question before we finish off on this. If, for instance, we agreed to plan for the lighting upgrade, rather than actually agree to installation, planning and installation. My question is, how long would the planning normally take to get an adequate plan up?
In response to that, Deputy Mayor, I would say a good... it does depend on what... I'd say a good year in my estimate. It depends, particularly if we're going to try and facilitate the movement of the ground. I think if we were just going to keep the playing surface where it was, that could happen a lot quicker. But I think if we're going to consider altering the location of the playing surface, I think that planning would take a little bit longer.
Okay, so there is potential for us to perhaps split this into a two-stage project, with planning being the first stage and potentially installation being a second stage. So that is something for us to consider as a council, correct?
Yep, that's correct, Deputy Mayor.
Okay. So we'll move on to the next item, 7.2, which is the expression of interest for Lot 50 Surrey Street, Bassendean. Councillors, you may ask questions, but I would remind you that if your questions delve into some of the confidential business, that you refrain from asking those questions until we're behind closed doors. So do we have any questions from or do we have a present, something from the officer? Yes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. As you see, this report is asking Council to consider the outcomes of a recent EOI process that was undertaken in response to a decision from Council late last year. As outlined in the report, the town received two submissions, and Council now needs to decide whether it wishes to progress with the disposition as provided for in Council's November decision. If it does wish to progress, it will need advertising in accordance with the Local Government Act, and a subsequent report to Council. But if Council does not wish to progress in the manner contemplated in the November report, it should decline both submissions.
Any questions from councillors? Okay, I have just one... it's just a small thing. In the alternative options that you've put up in the report, I note that options 2 and 5 look like they're identical except for some additional listing of shortcomings. Would that be correct, that 2 and 5 are literally identical apart from extra shortcomings?
No, Deputy Mayor. Option 2 involves a subdivision, but a subdivision such that the cottage and the residence stay on the same site. Option 5 provides for the subdivision of the cottage only.
Okay. Right, I misread that. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to the next item. If there are questions regarding the confidential attachments, we'll save those for later. Mm-hmm. 7.3, the draft policies for purchase and placement of memorials and celebration trees. Do we have a officer? Yes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So currently the town does not have a policy to guide frontline staff or residents by asking to plant a tree or provide a bench in the memory of a loved one. Based on councillors' feedback, officers have reviewed potential policy approach which facilitates this, providing better amenity and public value. For you are three parts to two policies. The first one is in relation to a celebration tree, where people can request to plant a tree at a significant point in someone's life. We have three funding options that have been presented in this council report. The officer recommendation, which has been put forward, has no additional cost to council and uses existing trees, therefore, as part of the tree replacement program or tree planting program. Secondly, there's the provision of seats at the applicant's cost. And third, in discussing with various community members that rang up recently in relation to this policy. There is also an opportunity for a resident to fund something more substantial, such as a planned park upgrade or playground as well.
So, councillors, any questions? Councillor Quinton?
Yes. This is much better. Thank you. I wanted to ask around the administration fee. Now, I understand that if we just use the tree out of the non-tree budget, that there would still need to be an overhead cost. Can you explain to me exactly what the overhead process is?
Broadly, in trying to work out what the cost would look like, they are looking like they would be similar costs. However, it would be fractionally cheaper to be planting the trees on bulk rather than on a case by case or a couple of tree case basis.
Yeah, so just explain to me the application process.
What would happen at the moment is that a resident would either do wish to spend it online, or they could fill in a form and pay the payment, or they could bring up and request the tree that way. We would then get together a planting program for winter, but we would try and work with the resident in terms of when they want to plant their tree. We would then schedule in a day. The parks team would go out and dig a hole for the tree in its location and bump off the area, and then they would leave, and then the family would be able to come and plant the tree in their own time. So the cost of the program is essentially cost neutral, because we'd be using the tree that we would have that we would plant anyway as part of our parks planting program, and then the fee would be for the administration in the case that's been put forward.
Okay, so it's essentially staff time and processing an application. Okay, if someone wanted to, for instance, plant two trees, would that be two lots of service fees?
Assuming it's the same park and the same day, then it would just be one service fee, and the two trees would go to that person for free.
Got you. Okay. I'll let others ask questions. Thank you.
And just confirming in the report that it's the intention of the staff to bring back an updated report on this trial in 12 months' time. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. If I may, the idea of a 12-month trial is that it's just uncertain what the uptake would look like as part of this program, and also the best way to deliver it. So the intent is to run it as a trial to be able to come back to council and say, is there a better way to deliver it, and what is that uptake?
Thank you very much. Councillor Gangell.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My question, and I know I've tried to find it, the estimated service fee that we would charge people, what would that be?
$175.
$175. So it's effectively about 60%. So I'm just wondering in relation to I quite like the concept. I don't have an issue with the concept. What I've heard a lot about is the budget situation we're in. It's quite dire. I don't think there's any secret about that. I'm just wondering, especially when you're looking at trees and potentially having multiple trees planted by the one family, if we don't have that area earmarked for tree planting, because I'm assuming there's some sort of strategy that we would have for tree planting, how then does that work when we're reallocating trees where we weren't initially planning to plant them? Because I'm assuming that the people get an opportunity to say where they would like the tree to be placed.
Thank you, Councillor, for the question through the Deputy Mayor. The intent of the program is that we'll have a tree planting program for 1 year, but also for multiple years in advance. So what we do is we work with the applicant to see if one of those locations was appropriate. If it wasn't and they had a particular park in mind, we would look at that park to see if a tree would be appropriate for that park or not. If it was appropriate, we would put a tree, we would allow that tree to go there. If it wasn't, we would help the applicant find a new one.
Yep, and just wondering on sustainability of the program, we're going on the factor of about a thing at the moment. We spend about, I think, roughly around 400,000 on trees, new trees a year, which I think is the 1,000 tree model. So you're going on that the town would continue to purchase 1,000 trees for the next foreseeable period of time?
Yes, that's the question again. You're the Deputy Mayor. We would be purchasing the number of trees that was made available within the tree budget for that year, and the cap to the program would be the number of trees that are available.
Thank you.
Bearing in mind, councillors, that all of that is subject to the budget councillors. Yeah. So we move on to 7.4, which is proposed tree preservation orders. This is fairly straightforward.
It is, Deputy Mayor, thank you. This is simply asking the council to consider making tree preservation orders over the Bassendean Hotel site. It, as you can see, recommends that council make TPOs over three of the trees on the site, which would align with the recent development approval granted by the Joint Development Assessment Panel.
Councillors, any questions? Councillor Quinton.
Has there been communication with the owners to put the TPO, and what's their feedback?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, yes, there has been. They understand that the trees that are being recommended for a TPO are already protected by virtue of the development approval condition. Therefore, the TPOs are largely sort of immaterial, and therefore they've got no real objection to it.
Thank you.
Councillor McWilliam.
It is the case that that all three trees, three of the 11 city gums, will be removed by the owners.
It's already gone.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Through the Deputy Mayor, one of them has been retained in accordance with the development approval, but otherwise the trees that are not being retained have already been removed.
So if there are no more questions, we'll move on to item 7.5, road closure, portions of Extension Road and West Road, Bassendean, which is what Mr. Pearson asked multiple questions about. So councillors, well, first of all, we'll go to the officer for review, report.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just going on in response to some of the comments made by the gentleman in the gallery, I'll just make the point that in terms of the draft town centre master plan, at the moment it's just a series of concepts, and nothing has been formally adopted by council, and in fact we've actually got a third round of consultation occurring in the next month or so, after which time council will formally consider all the submissions and make a decision on the master plan. So I just want to stress that the master plan has not been adopted in any way, and it's simply just a working draft at the moment. In terms of the matter at hand, for the road closure, it's simply a tidy-up from a land administration point of view and really has no bearing on the master plan or vice versa. It's simply dealing with a legacy issue that stems from the town's handling of the JDAP application from about 2013 or 2014, whereby I think 107 car parking bays and landscaping was approved to occur within the road reserve as opposed to within the confines of the site. So that's a legacy issue from 8 or so years ago, and this process is just simply tidying that up.
Councillors, any councillors with questions on this one? Okay, I have some questions on this one. I understand the perspective that this is just a tidy up of an anomaly. However, would you agree or disagree that planning should be something considered in a in the entirety of the environment, and I am taking on board the question asked by Mr. Pearson about the ramifications of allowing this road reserve land to be sold now prior to the completion of the Town Centre Master Plan, where it may actually preclude some options that we may not know about just at the moment. So my question is, are we advancing this too quickly, given that we have other things in train at the moment, like the Town Centre Master Plan?
No, I don't believe so, Madam Mayor. This is probably being done too late, if anything. This is a function of a decision made back in 2013 to allow private development to occur over the road reserve. It is simply formalising what is already there.
Okay. So my next question is that originally in the report, the town was, the administration was seeking to have some type of license agreement developed with Hawaiian over those parking bays. So I wonder why selling off the road reserve would be more preferable to engaging in a license agreement, which was the original pathway chosen by the town some months ago.
Through Deputy Mayor, it wasn't the preferred option. It was simply one of the two options, a license or a closure and sale. The preference was, in fact, for the closure and sale because it's more finite and cleaner. Having a license would be administratively burdensome, and given that the JDAP approval operates in perpetuity without a time limitation, it was considered appropriate to have a similar response to the road closure issue being something in perpetuity as opposed to a time-limited licence. So again, I take council back to that point that this is just simply a function of a decision made back in 2013.
Okay, so, sorry, I do actually have a lot of questions about this. So doesn't the existing boundary provide protection for the root zones on the mature trees, in that Hawaiian cannot at the moment, the way the setup is, they can't actually engage in any sort of works or development that would disturb those root zones because they're in the road reserve. So this again follows on from one of the questions from Mr. Pearson. So I'm curious about if we are selling this land, we're actually allowing this to become private land, and I think we are aware that if a development occurs, that there would be some difficulty possibly in protecting the existing trees. Would you agree with that?
Not necessarily, Deputy Mayor. If a development occurs, it would need to be authorised by development approval, and that would provide the Town Council and the JDAP as applicable to regulate that development. So I wouldn't share those concerns.
Okay. Another one they'll ask later. Am I correct in assuming that there will be a financial benefit to the state by the sale rather than the town?
Hmm.
Okay, so
that's correct.
So the only benefit to the town is a reduction in ongoing maintenance of the parking area, is that correct?
Through Deputy Mayor, that would be the financial benefit. I suppose the other benefit is resolving a situation that it contributed to.
Reading the report, there's been no expenditure on the parking bays thus far, is that right?
Through Deputy Mayor, I believe that's the case.
Okay. So can I ask another question? Because on the Whitfield Street side, there were multiple trees removed by Hawaiian recently because a retaining wall that had been put in during the previous development was failing. So if there's development approval, which requires the retention of trees, but subsequently something fails and those trees are removed, it doesn't seem to me like we have that many mechanisms to protect these things. I'm just asking what mechanisms are available to protect trees in that circumstance, because clearly those trees were involved in the original JDAP decision for protection as well, but they're all gone now.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, broadly the answer to that is conditions of development approval would be the mechanism to which the town would regulate and protect the trees. Hawaiian's approval from circa 2013 would have a long list of conditions attached to that development approval. I dare say one of which would be a landscaping plan, another one would be the implementation and maintenance of that landscaping plan. So there would still be statutory tools available to the town to regulate landscaping on site.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions from councillors? Councillor Quinton.
Do Hawaiian want to buy the land?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, they do now. Originally, they were the party that was most interested in a licence, but they have since changed their view and they're open-minded about purchasing it. Obviously, in terms of the consideration, that would be a matter between the state and Hawaiian.
How much is it worth? Do we know?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, again, that's a matter between the state and Hawaiian. I dare say the land section of the DPLH would undertake a valuation and make an offer to Hawaii to purchase.
So then is there any opportunity for a negotiation with the state government outside any kind of legal framework for us to negotiate a part grant to the town with the sale of this land? Am I just blue sky ideaing this now?
Through Deputy Mayor, the councillor is correct, there is no framework for that, but it is not to say a request couldn't be made, but the land section of the Department of Planning, Lands and Heritage and the Department of Finance are generally fairly clear that any windfall from state land is to be directed back to the state.
Mm. Doesn't hurt to ask though, right?
You can ask.
And would it then be prudent if we did approve this next week to put a tree preservation order on those trees? I understand that they'll have to go through an application, development application anyway, but it would show the town's desire to want to keep the trees, right?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, again, similar to the Baselina Hotel, it would be an additional layer of protection, but yes, that could be done.
Okay, thank you.
So following on from those questions, I have another additional question. given that this would be a transaction between the state and Hawaiian where we potentially get no benefit whatsoever, I revert back to the licence idea and ask you if we entered in as having a management order over that land, over that RAD reserve, would we not secure better results for ourselves by entering into a licence where at least Hawaiian maintain the road and the vegetation, the parking base and the vegetation? You see where I'm coming from. If there's a licence, there is some sort of benefit coming back to the town, to obviously to be negotiated, but with an outright sale, it's between the state and Hawaiian. Would that be not correct?
I wouldn't think so, Deputy Mayor. I would have to make some inquiries, but I don't think the town would be able to confer a financial benefit from Crown land in this instance.
I was asking about the licence. We were originally talking about a licence. Now, obviously, a licence involves the parties agreeing to something, be it maintenance or whatever. So I wasn't actually necessarily talking about a financial remuneration. I was curious about a licence would bestow some sort of benefit as opposed to an outright sale to the state. That's what I'm curious about, the contrast.
That's what Debbie... I'd be unsure of what benefit a licence would confer on the town, apart from representing an additional administrative burden.
Okay. Any more questions? So we'll move on to item 7.6. Oh, thank you, sir. 7.6, which is the draft local planning policy number 8, car parking and end of trip facilities.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This report is asking Council to consider an amended local planning policy relating to parking. Council does have a current policy, but it's not been reviewed for quite some time. This policy seeks to provide greater clarity in terms of requirements, particularly in terms of bicycle parking, end-of-trip facilities and rideshare, but also balanced flexibility in terms of its application. It was advertised for public comment and no submissions were received, so it's therefore recommended that Council adopt the policy, but in doing so it's also recommended that Council make a very minor change to existing LPP 17, which actually relates to home-based businesses, but we're asking Council to make a very minor change to one of the provisions there as it relates to car parking, just to better align the two.
Councillors, do we have any questions on this item? No? Okay. So we'll move on to item 7.7, the use of Youth Services Centre. And this is yourself again, Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This report is asking Council to consider allowing Scouts WA to use a portion of the Youth Services Facility down at Bassendean Oval. The proposal would enable the group exclusive use of a storeroom and occasional use of the broader facility when not otherwise being used by the town. The proposal appears to be a good alignment with the underlying purpose of the Youth Services Centre and is therefore supported.
Councillor Gangell.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'm just wondering, just with, I think we gave usage just last month to another group for the storage room. Does that conflict with this, or is there multiple storage rooms?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, there's different spaces.
Okay,
so the
thank you.
Last month was Repair Cafe, I believe.
Yes.
But this is a slightly different space.
Okay, thank you.
No other questions? Councillor Quinton.
When's our delegated authority policy coming on these kinds of matters?
We are actually reviewing our delegations, but just in regards to this one, effectively what we're doing is asking Council to allow Scouts to use the facility for no fee, but also even if it was delegated to me, for any delegations reason I want to escalate to Council, I can do so. But that's certainly something that we can consider in the July review.
Yeah, I understand. I just think, with these communities having to wait unnecessarily
Certainly.
Thank you.
So with that, we'll move on to item 7.8, Eden Hill Network Renewal Underground Program Pilot Deferral of Service Charge. Mr. White.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This report is asking Council to consider not imposing the service charge to recoup the cost of underground power consumer mains connection component from property owners. The project was initially scheduled to commence in August of last year and to be completed by November this year. There's been about a 10-month delay at Western Power's end, and consequently, by the time the initial rates instalment will be due in September this year, very little work would have occurred. We're expecting construction to commence in July in one of the three zones only, so the majority of property owners affected by this won't have experienced any work there. Their property by the time they will be asked to make the first instalment if it continues to be imposed for next year. So consequently, we're recommending a 12-month delay in imposition of the service charge.
Questions from councillors? None. Okay, so we'll move on to item 7.9, Children's Services, fees for Wind in the Willows, Early Education Centres. This again is Mr. White.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So fees and charges would normally be reviewed as part of the budget process. In relation to Wind in the Willows, we like to review the fees and charges for next year slightly earlier in an effort to provide reasonable notification to families if there is to be an increase in the fee. We are proposing an increase for next year from 1 July of $8 per day up to $123 per day for a daily fee, and for that to apply regardless of the number of days of care per week. That's $123 is within the cap that affords the local government rebate, so it represents a maximum of $4 out of pocket for families.
I'll just correct you there, Mr. White. You said next year, and I'm sure you mean this year.
Sorry, I can't help but thinking in terms of financial years, definitely, Mayor. So it's this year, this calendar year, but next financial year.
Okay. Any questions from councillors? Councillor Barty.
Do we have a financial hardship policy for any families that could be affected by the rate rise?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. No, we don't. I guess I would note that there are further discounts through government, the government subsidy for multiple children or people who might be in more difficult financial circumstances. The minimum 50% rebate applies regardless of income.
Just a follow-on question, if I can. From memory, and I may have this completely wrong, from memory at our workshop last week, there was a higher fee for families that had 5 days worth of care as opposed to families that had say, 5 single days. Is that still the case?
Okay, through you, Deputy Mayor. This current year, as it stands presently, there is a discount offered for families who might have a child in care for the full 5 days of the week. And we're proposing to abolish that discount from the 1st of July this year.
Okay.
To just have a standard daily fee.
Any more questions, councillors? Okay, we'll move on to item 7.10, Town of Bassendean Local Government Ordinary Election 2021. And I don't... That's you. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So consistent with previous local government ordinary elections in the district, this item seeks council to declare the WA Electoral Commissioner to be responsible for the conduct of the 2021 ordinary elections and for the election to be conducted as a postal vote. The benefits of appointing the WA Electoral Commissioner brings independence and expertise to the election process, and the risk of reduced voter participation for an in-person election, especially given the global pandemic, is also noted. The cost of appointing the WA Electoral Commissioner is $54,000, and there are also likely to be additional costs incurred for staff salaries, advertising, and potential legal expenses if needed. And that will, those costs will need to be covered in the 21-22 budget. And there's a meeting next week with the WA Electoral Commissioner post the council meeting, if this goes ahead, to discuss the process and the timeframes, etc.
Any questions from councillors? No? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 7.11, Standards for CEO Recruitment, Performance and Termination Policy.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So the Local Government Legislation Amendment Act 2019 includes a requirement for model standards covering the recruitment and selection, the performance review and the termination of employment of local government CEOs. So these reviews are intended to ensure best practice, these reforms, and greater consistency in the processes across different local governments. As part
part of incorporating the model standards, it has been recommended that local governments determine any inconsistencies that exist between the CEO standards and relevant council policies. Recently, Welga published a model CEO standards policy to assist all local governments adopt a policy aligned to the new regs and standards. So the Welga model CEO standards policy covers the principles of the new standards. Our revised draft policy has gone further to incorporate the process steps as well, consistent with the principles. And if we can compare our current policy with the revised draft policy, you'll notice that our current policy doesn't address recruitment or termination. So the new revised policy addresses recruitment, performance and termination.
Thank you. Councillors, do we have any questions on that one? Can I just clarify the... termination is covered in the contract, though.
It is, but the model standards provide, I guess, the expectations that should be adhered to. And so if any of those are missing from the employment contract and also the policy, those things are addressed.
Okay, so councils, we'll move on to 7.12, which is the quarterly report. Do you wish to speak to it, or do you want to go straight to questions?
I'm happy to go straight to questions.
Councillors, does anyone have questions for this one? I did have a lot of questions for the workshop where we didn't get time to discuss this, but I'm going to confine myself just to one question tonight. It's on page 26, the last page of the quarterly report, and it relates to review council's public arts framework. And I know it's not started, but I would question why we would review the framework, given that in the past, councillors have talked about the fact that we've got a $200,000 plus art budget, which has been sitting there for some time. So my question would be, why would we actually review the public art framework rather than move to a process that, for instance, the City of Vincent have a EOI process where they invite artists to provide proposals which are considered by council. Also, I would actually highlight Metronet have recently invited artists from all mediums to provide proposals for various outlet sites with almost no constraints. So I question the need for a framework when we have funds there. Could you explain to me why this is in there as a required action?
So this is part of the corporate business plan that was endorsed by council. Mm-hmm. So staff are merely implementing that action. But I appreciate what you're saying, Deputy Mayor. I think the idea of postponing consideration of the public arts framework until after the Town Centre Master Plan project concludes is that the public arts contribution from developers is a potential lever that we could consider in terms of how we want to use that going forward. In regards to the funds that are currently sitting in our reserve for public art, there is some work underway at the moment looking at how we can expend those funds aligned with some of the projects that we've currently got on our plate at the moment.
Excellent. Okay, so unless there's any other questions, we'll move on to item 7.13, accounts paid. Are there any questions on that item? No? Okay. Okay, so we'll move on to item 7.14, monthly financial report. Again, councillors, are there any questions? Or, sorry, Mr. White, would you like to speak to this in any way, shape, or form?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. No, I'm just taking some questions.
Okay. So, are there any questions on this item, councillors? No? So, we'll move on to motions of which previous notice has been given. There are none. Which means we will move on to confidential business. So I would ask for a mover to go behind closed doors. Councillor Barty, seconded Councillor McWilliam. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for attending tonight. Have a lovely evening.